So, thank you very much for tuning in, attending to Bhagavatam class. So we're going to be discussing today from Canto 7, Chapter 14, Text 35. Here it is. Devar or Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Devar Sharhatsu Vaisatsu. Devar Sharhatsu Vaisatsu. Tatra Brahmatma Jadishu. Rajan Yad Agrapujayam. Mata Patrataya Chutaha. Devarshyar Hatsu Vaisatsu. Tatra Brahmatma Jadishu. Rajan Yad Agrapujayam. Mata Patrataya Chutaha. Prabhus. Devar Sharhatsu Vaisatsu. Devar Sharhatsu Vaisatsu. Tatra Brahmatma Jadishu. Rajan Yad Agrapujayan. Mata Patrataya Chitaha. Devar Sharhatsu Vaisatsu. Tatra Brahmatma Jadishu. Rajan Yad Agrapujayam. Mata Patrataya Chutaha. Matajis? Devar Sharhatsu Vaisatsu. Tatra Brahmatma Jadishu. Rajan Yad Agrapujayam. Mata Patrataya Chutaha. Let's look at the word for words. Devarishi, among the demigods and great saintly persons, including Narada Muni. Arhatsu, the most venerable and worshipable personalities. Vai, indeed, Satsu, the great devotees, Tatra, there, at the Rajasuya Yajna, Brahma Atma Jadishu, and the sons of Lord Brahma, such as Sanaka, Sanandana, Sanat, and Sanatana. Rajan, O King, yet from whom Agrapujayam, the first to be worshipped, Mataha, decision, Patrataya, selected as the best person to preside over the Rajasuya Yajna, Achyutaha, Krishna. Translation, O King Yudhishthir, the demigods, many great sages and saints, including even the four sons of Lord Brahma and I myself, were present at your Rajasuya sacrificial ceremony. But when there was a question of who should be the first person worshipped, everyone decided upon Lord Krishna, the Supreme Person. Please repeat after me. O King Yudhishthir, the demigods, many great sages and saints, including even the four sons of Lord Brahma and I myself, were present at your Rajasuya sacrificial ceremony. But when there was a question of who should be the first person worshipped, everyone decided upon Lord Krishna, the Supreme Person. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is a reference to the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhishthir. In that meeting, there was a great turmoil over selecting the best person to be worshipped first. Everyone decided to worship Sri Krishna. The only protest came from Shishupal, and because of his vehement opposition, he was killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agyantimidandhasa Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Militam Minatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupagada Mayham Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shigudau Shiutaparikamalam Shigudun Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagaranagaratan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvayetam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vashakan Vitam Shcha. Hare Krishna Kuruna Sandho Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Dadha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Dadhe Brindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpadudu Bhyascha Kripa Sandhu Bhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavani Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Karadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So once again in this section, Maharaj Yudhishthir is sitting before Narada Muni, who's describing to him how to be a grihastha in Krishna consciousness. So in this particular section, he's gone into detail about Kala Desha Patra, what is the proper time, place, and circumstance for worship. And by worship, which is a central feature of the grihastha ashram, it kind of circles around this principle of worship. So by circumstance, it means who should worship be given to? Who should the grihastha ashram center around? All activities flow into worship, just like the rivers of the ocean flow into the ocean. So who should they be directing towards? So the answer is very clearly given by Narada Muni. It should be directed towards Krishna. The life of the devotees, everything in their life, all aspects of their existence should flow towards Krishna and ultimately bow down to Krishna and wash the feet of Krishna. Right? So we see in this particular situation is being mentioned that Maharaj Yudhishthir had performed the Rajasuya sacrifice. So this Rajasuya sacrifice is very significant. It's called the Rajasuya, means it's the king of all sacrifices. And in that sacrifice, there's a moment when the person who receives first worship is elected. That's called Agrapuja. And that person is to be considered sort of like the president of the sacrifice. He's seeing over the sacrifice. And for Maharaj Yudhishthir, this is actually a very great honor, a very great moment in his life, because for a kshatriya and a grihastha, it's a great opportunity to offer everything to Krishna. His entire kingdom is used as a instrument in the service of Krishna, just like we have the deity paraphernalia on the altar here. So for Maharaj Yudhishthir, the entire kingdom, his entire empire, is sort of like his worship from paraphernalia. He's using everything that he's striven for, everything that he achieved, and all the opulence that he's achieved by following Dharma, he's using it in the worship of Krishna. And also as the emperor, in front of his entire empire, in front of the entire world, and all the individuals that were at the Rajasuya sacrifice, he's making the example of bowing down to Krishna and humbly worshipping Krishna before everyone. It's like we see in Puri, the example of King Prataparudra. Right? He went before the deity of Jagannath and would sweep the street before the cart. So in the same way, Maharaj Yudhisthira, as the leader of society, is using this wonderful opportunity of performing this sacrifice in order to show the entire world what is the proper example of a leader, of a kshatriya, of a grihastha. Right? It's actually a preaching situation for Maharaj Yudhisthira. In fact, we see this story of the Rajasuya sacrifice. It really begins when Narada Muni visits Krishna in Dwarka. And what happens is, when Narada Muni comes, Krishna sees him and immediately offers him all respect and worship as a great sage, a Devarshi. And he asks him, he mentions that, you know, you travel all throughout the three worlds. You're going to the higher planetary systems, and here you are in this earth. So we can learn from you the news of the universe. So he asks Narada Muni, please tell me, what are the Pandavas up to? What is Maharaj Yudhisthira up to? What is he planning? Right? And so Narada Muni immediately explains that it's the desire of Maharaj Yudhisthira to perform this sacrifice. And actually, he says that he tells Krishna very clearly that Maharaj Yudhisthira has no desire for anything in this world. He's not performing this Rajasuya sacrifice for material opulence. He's not trying to gain anything. Rather, he has all the opulence of Lord Brahma. And Narada Muni should know. He travels throughout the universe, right? So when he says that in Hastinapur, it says opulent is the abode of Brahma, that means it really is. There's nothing that Maharaj Yudhisthira could desire. But he mentions to Krishna that his desire is that he wants to worship you. He wants to show everyone in the universe that you are the object of worship, that all worship should be directed towards you. Or as being mentioned in the verse here, that you're the patrataya, you're the person who should be worshipped first. All the great sages and demigods and rishis, they'll come to this Rajasuya sacrifice. And therefore, Maharaj Yudhisthira wants to establish in front of everyone that you are the supreme object of worship. Right? So it's very significant that from the very beginning, the time of the planning of the Rajasuya sacrifice, this was Maharaj Yudhisthira's intention. There was no desire other than this, but the worship of Krishna. So, Krishna decided, okay, I'm going to go to Hastinapur. And eventually when he arrived, and there's a great description in the Bhagavatam of his traveling to Hastinapur and his welcoming by Maharaj Yudhisthira, he embraces all the various Pandavas, and even Maharaj Yudhisthira comes before him and is embraced by him, and it describes how Maharaj Yudhisthira was thrilled with ecstasy to be embraced by the Supreme Lord. So many pastimes happen. Krishna and Arjuna, they burn the forest, the Kandava forest. And Maya Danava, of course, takes shelter of Krishna, and the Maya demon, he builds the Shabha, the assembly house of Maharaj Yudhisthira, at the request of Krishna. It's actually Krishna was doing this out of affection for Maharaj Yudhisthira. He wanted to give a gift to Maharaj Yudhisthira, and to it's an exchange of love. So he engaged this powerful personality in building this huge, magnificent, and beautiful assembly house for his kingdom. So, later, while sitting in that assembly house, I wanted to read here. This is a quote from Krishna book. This is Maharaj Yudhisthira speaking to Krishna. He says, I want to perform this Rajasuya sacrifice and invite the demigods to show that they have no power independent of you, that they are all your servants and you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Foolish persons with a poor fund of knowledge consider your lordship an ordinary human being. Sometimes they try to find fault in you, and sometimes they defame you. Therefore, I wish to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. I wish to invite all the demigods, beginning from Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the other exalted chiefs of the heavenly planets. And in that great assembly of demigods from all parts of the universe, I want to substantiate that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that everyone is your servant. So this, as being mentioned here by Narada, that all these great rishis and demigods and sages, including himself, they came to your sacrifice. They came, you know, by the hundreds. In fact, in the Krishna book, there's a big list of all the great rishis that were there. It's a very long list. And so they came by the hundreds at your request while you're performing the sacrifice. And your entire intention from the beginning was simply to show that Krishna is the supreme object of worship, right? That he is the Patrataya, that everyone should bow down to him and glorify him, that no one is superior to him, right? This was your intention. And they all came and they agreed, as described how Sahadev, he stood up in the assembly and he began to glorify Krishna. He began to describe that, Krishna, you're just like watering the root of the tree. Anyone who worships you and glorifies you, they are actually worshiping and glorifying anyone, everyone. Right? You're the supreme Brahma. Basically, very similar to what Arjuna says in Bhagavad Gita, Param Dhamma, Param Brahma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan, right? And what was the response from the crowd? You can picture these, you know, sacrifices going on, and there's hundreds of these demigods and great personalities. And as soon as Sahadev glorified Krishna as the supreme object of worship, they all began to applaud uproariously, right? The place went, it's like if you go to a basketball game or something, and, you know, someone makes a slam dunk and everyone goes, ah, you know. So Sahadev slam dunked it, right? And so everybody was totally ecstatic. They became so happy to hear this glorification of Krishna. It became clear to everyone Krishna's position. Well, almost everyone, right? And so they all began shouting, sadhu, sadhu, right? And then Maharaj Yudhisthira, he began the worship. Now, it seems to me, we've seen this picture of Maharaj Yudhisthira performing this worship when Krishna is sitting on the throne, right? And there's a pillow and he's there bowing down. It's such a beautiful moment. I mean, this appears to me to be sort of a high point in Maharaj Yudhisthira's career as emperor, right? He's, again, he's using everything in his kingdom, all of his life, everything he's ever acquired, his whole situation, simply to bow down and worship Krishna at that one moment. Krishna is sitting there on a throne, and he's there before him with all the articles of worship. I want to read from Krishna book. Prabhupada saying here, King Yudhisthira, after hearing the confirmation by all present, especially by the brahmanas and learned sages, worshipped Lord Krishna according to the regular principles of the Vedic injunctions. First of all, King Yudhisthira, along with his brothers, wives and children, other relatives and ministers, washed the lotus feet of Krishna and sprinkled the water on their heads. So, not only is Maharaj Yudhisthira worship him alone, but everyone in Maharaj Yudhisthira's life, all of his family members, all of his relatives, all of his ministers, everyone close to him in his life, everyone connected to him, is brought before Krishna, and they all wash his feet. This is a very powerful experience. You can imagine for Maharaj Yudhisthira. I remember like a week ago, my father visited, right? And he's a, you know, with all due respect, he's a Malecha Yavana, you know, typical Westerner. But there's some piety there by the grace of Krishna. When he came to the temple, he bows down when he comes into the temple. And then he came before the deities and he offered the lamp to the deities, right? And he came and Satchitanoi Prabhu was doing the Radhakund water, right? Where you come up and do some offering to Radhakund and he pours Radhakund water on your head. So my father, you know, who I know exactly what his situation is. I know, like us all, how much he needs Krishna's mercy. I was seeing the foot water of Krishna splash on his head, right? And I felt so grateful to the deities. I felt so grateful to Krishna, you know, to see him there. And to take those, he was actually, his response was that, you know, he needs all the blessings he can get, right? So he was accepting the mercy of Krishna. And I felt so grateful to Krishna, so appreciative. So we can imagine Maharaj Yudhisthira, not only are his intimate relatives there, but everybody practically that he can get, all of the people he knows and loves and is associated with in his life, they're all washing the feet of the Supreme Lord directly. That's pretty amazing, you know? And then it says here, after this he offered Lord Krishna various kinds of yellow silken garments and presented heaps of jewelry and ornaments before him for his use. So he brought incredible amounts of treasure out, and they laid it before the deities. Just like when we do in festival days, we'll bring out all sorts of offerings for the deities. So he laid all this. I'm like, you can't even imagine how much this wealth is there. Jewels, diamonds, gold, carpentry, you know, fun with spine silk, right? So then it says, King Yudhisthira felt such ecstasy by honoring Krishna, his only lovable object, right? All of his attachment, all of his love and affection is put into Krishna. This is the essence of the Grihastha Ashram. as was being mentioned in the previous portions of the chapter, right? That the grihastha, his primary duty is to gradually, by dovetailing everything in Krishna's service, bringing everything into the process of offering to Krishna, who's the supreme object of worship, he is supposed to gradually lift this loving propensity towards the Lord, so that his only attachment is for Krishna. Although externally he's performing all of his duties, right? So we see Maharaj Yudhisthira, the perfect grihastha, tears glided down from his eyes. And although he wanted to see Lord Krishna, he could not see him very well. So just like Daruka, he's worshipping Krishna, he's doing the puja to Krishna, and he can't even see Krishna because the tears are just covering his vision. Right? When Lord Krishna was thus worshipped by King Yudhisthira, all the members present in the assembly stood up with folded hands and began to chant, Jai, Jai, Namaha, Namaha. All joined together to offer their respectful obeisances to Krishna, and there were showers of flowers from the sky. So picture this from Maharaj Yudhisthira's perspective. He can't even see Krishna because his eyes are covered in tears of ecstasy. Right? All he hears is uproarious around him in this assembly house, demigods and great sages chanting, Jai, Jai, you know, cheering, right? This wonder, because they're observing this beautiful devotee, Maharaj Yudhisthira, offering this worship to the Supreme Lord, and they're so ecstatic, right? So they're so happy, and this huge crowd is glorifying Krishna, and then they begin to shower flowers upon Krishna from the sky. So this is just like just like in an opera or something, you know, have the araya, you know, the moment of the climax where the beautiful situation has reached such a point that it's mind-blowing, right? So simply these flowers just begin to rain down upon Krishna. And this is the worship of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He's remembering this. And Narada Muni is reminding him this, right? Now Narada Muni, also here, it's important to note that while he's preaching to him and explaining to him this principle of Krishna being the supreme object of worship, he explains it to him in such a way that Maharaj Yudhisthira can understand. He brings it into Maharaj Yudhisthira's realm of experience, into his field of activities. Right? And we see Srila Prabhupada is very expert at this. If you listen to his lectures and read his books, he's constantly referring to our own life, how we can apply Krishna consciousness in our life, our own experiences. An acharya, according to Kala Desha Patra, time, place, and circumstance, he takes these eternal truths and he speaks them in a way that the audience can understand. Right? Maharaj Yudhisthira also, Narada Muni is explaining to him a very important principle that the path of religion, the path towards the Supreme Lord, it's difficult to understand. And therefore, to clearly understand that path, it has to be illuminated by the movements of the previous acharyas, the Mahajans. Maharaj Yudhisthira himself actually is famous for saying this. In the Mahabharata, Prabhupada quotes this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Tarko pratishta shrutayo vibhina nasav rishir yasya matam nabhinam dharmasya tattam nihitam guhayam mahajano yenagata sapanta. Dry arguments are inconclusive. A great personality whose opinion does not differ from others is not considered a great sage. Simply by studying the Vedas, which are variegated, one cannot come to the right path by which religious principles are understood. So even though the Vedas clearly describe the path of worship, they clearly describe that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worship is meant for him. Even though the path of transcendence is clearly laid out, it becomes covered. It's hard to understand because there's so many people speculating and there's so many conditioned souls giving their opinions, covering it with their misunderstandings. Therefore, you have to understand it by following the previous acharyas. They make the path clear. As it says here, the solid truth of religious principles is hidden in the heart of an unadulterated, self-realized person. Consequently, as the shastras confirm, one should accept whatever progressive path the Mahajans advocate. So, this point is that, it's just like, for example, has anyone ever been driving, like if you're driving down kind of a windy road in the dark or something, even in Los Angeles there's roads like this, where the roads will kind of branch off in all different directions, and at a certain point it becomes hard to tell which is the main road. I know like La Brea does this, right? It's like all of a sudden, you know, these big branches come off and you're like, well, which way am I supposed to go? And there's no signs or anything like that. So usually, at least what I do is I'll just follow the traffic. You know, I'll follow the people that look like they know where they're going, right? There's at least one person, you know, going fast, and he looks like, okay, well, he's trying to, you know, he knows the way. So you just kind of follow him, and sure enough, you know, you're still on La Brea, right? You make it to that difficult point where the path became obscured. You follow his headlights. So similar, or his taillights. So similarly, that's how we're supposed to progress in spiritual life. We understand the Vedas. We can see clearly the roads before us. But as far as how to travel through that path, you look at the taillights of the Mahajans. You see where they have gone, right? And so in this particular verse today, Narada Muni has mentioned these various Mahajans and tied it into Maharaj Yudhisthira's experience of worshipping the Supreme Lord before everyone, and how they all agreed and understood Krishna to be the supreme object of worship. Okay? So I wanted to take a moment speaking about the Mahajans and following their example. We're going to read a little bit from this book, Babaji Maharaj, about Gaur Kachora Das Babaji. Today is his disappearance day. And I wanted to read this section. This book is divided into small little stories. I can't see the clock. Can someone tell me how much time we have? Okay, so we don't have much time. But I'd like to read here. There's no breakfast? Okay. So we'll just read maybe another 10 minutes or so. That's okay. So here in this particular section, Gaur Kachora Das Babaji Maharaj, there's a pastime describing the duty of married couples. So I thought I would read this because the chapter we're reading is the ideal family life. Narada Muni is discussing the same thing. After his wedding, a rich man from Calcutta who had taken shelter at the lotus feet of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wished to know how he could utilize his time in Hari Bhajan while situated in married life. With that purpose in mind, he approached Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur for instruction. The wealthy gentleman became very depressed when he was informed by Saraswati Thakur that there might well be various obstacles in his attempt to perform Hari Bhajan as a householder. Later on, this gentleman, accompanied by Srila Saraswati Thakur, went to meet Srila Gaur Kachora Das Babaji Maharaj on the riverbank at Kulia. When it was mentioned to Srila Babaji Maharaj that the gentleman had married, Babaji Maharaj commented, "Yes, it is all right that he is married. From this time on, he will daily cook and offer foodstuffs to Lord Vishnu. After offering it to him, he will serve the prasad to his wife. And then as a Vaishnava, he will take her prasad remnants. He will consider her as Krishna's servitor and his spiritual master. He will not think of her as an object for sensual gratification. Everything in this world, wealth, jewelry, men and women, are all for worshipping Krishna. That which is meant for Krishna's service should be utilized as such. Do not consider your wife as one meant for your service. Instead, respect her as a servitor of Krishna." So it's a very important instruction. And we can also see a perfect example of this as we're reading today is Maharaj Yudhisthira, right? All of the various objects that he, you know, his relatives, everything within his kingdom were used simply for the worship of Krishna, who's, again, the supreme object of worship. Continuing, it says, "Here in the purport to Babaji Maharaj's foregoing discussion with householders, the sense of proprietorship of one's spouse is to be eschewed, and the conception of one's spouse as Krishna's worshipable servitor is to be nurtured. When one regards one mate as the servitor of the Lord, and thus suitable for enjoyment only, for his, meaning Krishna's enjoyment only, one can easily transcend the urge to indulge in illicit sex, which so bedevils many a married couple." So the point being made is that one should see their spouse as Krishna's servant, not as the body, right? These male-female relationships, the husband and wife relationship, obviously, is based upon the body. It's based upon the misidentification that we're male and female. So as Vaishnavas, we're meant to purify ourselves of that illusion by engaging in Krishna consciousness, chanting Hare Krishna, right, following the system given by the spiritual master. Gradually, we become cleansed of that. We identify ourselves as servants of Krishna. And we see everything in this world is meant for Krishna's enjoyment, not ours. This is the essential point of Krishna consciousness, is to remove ourself from the center of our consciousness, our illusion self, our false ego, and put Krishna in the center. See the world in relationship to Krishna's enjoyment, not in relationship to our false enjoyment. And therefore, for a devotee, two devotees, they may be a grihastha couple, but if they're truly on the platform of spiritual realization, they'll see each other as servants of Krishna, because that's what we really are. They won't look at each other for enjoyment, rather they'll look at each other for Krishna's enjoyment. How to assist each other to serve and worship Krishna, how to offer everything to Krishna. And in that consciousness, then the danger of falling into illicit sex becomes minimized, right? You're pushing yourself into Krishna's feet, and by Krishna's shelter, you're protected. So I also wanted to read here about Babaji Maharaj's disappearance. Here it says, the entrance into his eternal pastimes, into the eternal pastimes of the Lord. And then Bengali year 1322, at dawn, on the 30th day of the month of Kartik, the corresponding to November 16th, 1915, Srila Gaurakishore Das Goswami entered the eternal pastimes of the Lord. That day, at sunrise, Srila Sarasvati Thakur left Sri Mayapur for the Rani Dharamsala at Kulia, where Babaji Maharaj had been staying. The head priests of Navadvip's various temples and ashrams began to argue amongst themselves about where Babaji Maharaj's spiritual body would be interred. A heated argument arose. There was a material motive behind the dispute, for the contending parties considered that establishing the Babaji Samadhi at their ashram or temple would put them in a position to earn handsomely from the pilgrims who would flock to see the tomb of the Paramahamsa. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur arrived, and so many other persons were there. He came to find all of these various individuals there trying to claim Babaji Maharaj's body, right? And they weren't doing it out of spiritual devotion. They wanted to use his body simply to make money. Very degraded mentality. So Srila Saraswati Thakur opposed their illegitimate attempts, however. Apprehending a breach of peace, Navadvip's inspector of police, who was at that time Mr. Jatindranath Singh, arrived there. After much controversy, the various hypocritical Vaishnavas, we'll say that in quotations, stated their position. So they're discussing this before the police officer. Srila Sarasvati Thakur is not a sannyasi and that thus has no right to prepare a samadhi for a person who has renounced his home. Hearing their pronouncement, Sarasvati Thakur replied in a voice like thunder, saying, "I am the sole disciple of Paramahamsa Babaji Maharaj. Even though I have not accepted sannyas, I am a celibate brahmachari, and by the grace of Babaji Maharaj, I am not a hypocritical renunciate, secretly addicted to abominable habits and fornication as some monkey-like people are. I take pride in saying this as a bearer of Babaji Maharaj's shoes. If there is someone here who is a renunciate of truly stainless character, then he can come forward and arrange for the samadhi." So he's very, very bold, very strong. He's basically a monkey, a Markat Vairagi, as someone wearing the clothes of a renunciate, but behaving just like the grossest materialist. We see the monkey lives in the forest, it's naked, it eats very simple roots and fruits and nuts. But if you see what monkeys do all day is talk nonsense, they steal, they fight. Right, they swing from trees and then they try to have sex as much as possible. So what's the use? He's saying that these individuals here basically are on that platform, and he's mentioning that, where do I get this strength? Why am I speaking so boldly? Because I carry the shoes of my Guru Maharaj on my head. That is the power. And Prabhupada would also say this, that we call people mudhas, but actually I'm not calling people mudha. Krishna's calling people mudhas, right? And so it's not out of false ego that he's saying this. He says, "He who within the last 1 year or 6 months, 3 months, 1 month, or even 3 days has not indulged in illicit association with women will be able to touch his spiritually blissful body." So not only is he saying, anyone who hasn't fallen from their principles, anyone who's a real renunciate, please come forward. And then he goes down, what about if you haven't broken your vows in 1 year? No one comes forward. Okay, finally he works his way down to 3 days. If you haven't had illicit sex in 3 days, come and take his body. And no one would come forward. This is a very intense situation, you can imagine. Hearing these words, the inspector of police said,
how will the evidence for this be produced? Right? Srila Sarasvati Thakur rejoined, I will believe what they say. After this challenge was offered, the Babaji's turned their backs one by one and departed from that place. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was left alone with the body of his Guru Maharaj. He defeated them all, right? By Krishna's grace. The inspector of police was dumbfounded. Some of the people remained there advised that Babaji Maharaj had expressed a last desire that his body be dragged to the streets of Navadvip in the dust of the Dham. To this, Sarasvati Thakur replied, although we are fools, inexperienced and offenders, we will not be disinclined to understand the true meaning of those humility-filled words which have been spoken by my Gurudev to destroy the pride of worldly-minded people. So this is the tendency. Sometimes if you've ever been to a cemetery in Los Angeles, don't want to offend anyone, but you'll see that people build themselves these magnificent tombs. Right? Even nowadays, they build statues of themselves. You know, first of all, it began, you know, they had these tombstones and they have their face etched in it. Right? And then it's like a competition. Who can get the biggest thing? You know, and sometimes they even have like these huge, like 10-foot statues of just like a businessman, you know? So that for a materialistic person, it's very important to have a very dramatic and you know, to show their wealth, their power, their prestige at the time of death. Right? It's the final exclamation point in a life of pride and arrogance. And so Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati is making the point that this Gaurakishore's Babaji was simply saying that to smash this gross mentality, right? Don't give some big funeral, just drag my body through the streets of the Dham, let it be covered in the dust, the sacred dust, right? Even Krishna Chandra will personally think himself successful if he carries my Gurudev on his head and shoulders. After the departure of Haridas Thakur, Srila Gaurasundar took the spiritual body of the Thakur on his lap and danced. What dignity he adorned it with. Therefore, following in the footsteps of Sriman Mahaprabhu, we shall also bear Babaji Maharaj's spiritual body on our heads. So, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati is making the point that no, we actually want to honor our Guru Maharaj to the highest degree, even though the statements of his humility are there. On the following day, November 17, 1915, on the Uttan Ekadashi, in the afternoon, and according to the scriptural ordinances, Srila Sarasvati Thakur laid the body of his Guru to rest on a newly formed sand pit on the Ganges at Kulia. A low caste person of Lohagada from the district of Jeshur donated his property and claimed to give up all rights to it. Yet after some time, he forgot his promise and utilized that land for various illicit materialistic activities. So this material world is very contaminating, you know. Although he was criticized for this, he maintained his pride and committed offenses to the eternal associates of Lord Chaitanya. 16 years later, by the will of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, his place of rest was eroded by the river Ganges and inundated by it. Srila Sarasvati Thakur organized a party of men and recovered the samadhi intact and brought it to the bank of Radhakund at Brajapatan, where he re-established it before a memorial of Sri Guna Manjari. Nitya Gauranga Das Adighari, a disciple of Srila Sarasvati Thakur, helped to construct a beautiful samadhi temple on the site. So, how many devotees have been there in Navadvip? Yeah? It's a very nice, beautiful temple there, small temple. So that was established after Babaji Maharaj was removed from the original place. And the point is being made that this place where the samadhi was originally established, the individual began using it for sinful activities. It was not taken care of properly. And therefore, by the grace of Babaji Maharaj, that place was made unusable. So they moved it to a very nice temple. And all the devotees, of course, encouraged to visit there. We close our recounting of the transcendental deeds of Babaji Maharaj with this oft-recited prayer. Namo Gaurakishoraya Sakshat Vairagyamutaye Vipralambhara Sambudhe Padambujaya Te Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, the spiritual master of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, who is renunciation personified. He is always merged in a feeling of separation from intense love of Krishna. So thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions? Okay, Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.